Hei wahi tapu, wahi rahi mai. Ingia tahora, me ingia ahi. Kia ora, aroha nui. Many blessings and welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 215. This is Jeff Phillips Weverson, recording the show atop beautiful Memory Island, a little island off of Arafaro Beach here on Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand, where I returned about a week ago after an absolutely fantastic, comprehensive eight-month journey around two-thirds of Australia. Hei wahi tapu, wahi rahi mai, ingā tahora me ingā ahi, is Māori for a sacred place of guidance from the whales and dolphins. Many thanks to founder of the 13 Grandmothers Down Under, Māori whale dreaming elder Kiri Dews. It's really nice to be back here on Aotea. It's been 10 months since I was here. Today is a very beautiful day, very spring-like, quite warm, not so windy, a few little white cumulus clouds in the sky, but almost every day this past week it's been extraordinarily windy with cloud alternating with little bits of sunshine every 30 minutes or so. Just the circulating pattern that seems to be rotating around Antarctica, bringing very disruptive, what my friend describes as crazy weather here. And I remember very well when I was here last year that it was one of the shortest visits to New Zealand that I've ever had, only 3 months. And it was the first time in 16 or 17 years that I remember actually being glad to leave New Zealand because of the bizarre and ongoing weather. No matter where I was, the weather was just totally wrong. Totally wrong, based on anything even remotely like what the norm has been for the past 16 or 17 years that I've been traveling here. This is my first new live show that I've recorded in about 3 weeks. The last one was at the Todd River bed in Alice Springs. And since then, I've covered a massive amount of ground travel, going to Adelaide, visited Kangaroo Island briefly, then went to Melbourne, went up to the William Ricketts Sanctuary, then to Sydney, watched the full moon rise from Bondi with some ancient petroglyphs there. And then for the past week here, I spent one night in Auckland and came ahead out to Great Barrier Island. I've just been really resting up after being very physically exhausted from the previous month of full-on exertion and travel. Feeling pretty good now, and it's really nice to be here. I really want to thank the Dreamtime ancestors and all the chakras in the body of the rainbow serpent in Australia for one of the most beautiful and powerful visits I've ever had there. And also all my beautiful friends and family, both old and new, who made my visit there so fantastic and gave me such great support for my art. I actually painted 8 murals in Australia this time in as many months, which is a record. Never done that many in that short of a period of time before. And I really want to thank everybody that's been trying to support me and my art, both because of the work I do and to also help me replace my Nikon camera that got damaged by Mother Ocean down in Tasmania back in February. Just today I was looking at my old D700, the one that got destroyed by the ocean. I keep carrying it around with me because I want it to meet the new D4S before I'm probably buried in the ground somewhere. She served me very well. Over 66,000 high-resolution digital photos taken. But I really miss having a good camera. One of the main reasons is for
shooting high-resolution photographs of the massive amount of art that I'm always creating, but also to do low-light astronomical photography, which is one of my unique specialties. And astronomical photography was the original reason that I got into photography with a 35mm camera back in 1970. Anyway, using Kodachrome film, ASA-25, shooting the crescent moon and Venus and star trails. So the island I'm on now, it's called Memory Island. And just down the beach, which the white man calls Medlands, named after the Medland family, but the original Maori name is Arafaro, O-R-U-A-W-H-A-R-O. You can hear some oyster catchers in the background there. Arafaro was the high priest of the Takatimu Waka, which was the last wave of migratory sailboats of Polynesians that came across the Pacific Ocean. And the story is told to me by Rodney Nawaka, the elder of the largest iwi here on the island. In an interview with him about 3 years ago, he said that Arafaro had been guided across the ocean by seven tohura, seven right whales. And they guided him right to this bay, which was his destination. He knew where he was going. The whales somehow knew to guide him right there, and he was so thankful and grateful upon arrival that the very first thing he did was he got out of his boat and he went up on this rock, which is another little kind of island similar to Memory Island, just down the beach here, about a kilometer and a half. It's called Totoko o Kahukura. Totoko means the rock. And Kahu, I think, means sacred. So I'm guessing what it means is this is the sacred rock of blessing, where Arafaro spread out his cape on the sand and offered a special thanks and a prayer for the whales that had guided him all the way across the ocean. I thought that was a really, really fantastic story. And the beach at which I now am, on either side of the base of Memory Island, are the places where I've had my most intensive encounters with dolphins ever. Both when Lisbon and I encountered some, I think it was in 2010, it was her first encounter with any. These three dolphins came up really close and were literally zapping us with this really powerful energy that made us feel very exhilarated. They came and went several times over about an hour, like a meter away from us. And when we got out, we both felt exhilarated, but we looked at each other, and I go, "Do you feel that?" And she goes, "Yeah." We felt as if the dolphins had imparted a very profound sense of urgency or a warning to us about something that was going to happen. We thought that it referred to some kind of planetary cataclysm that had not yet happened, and we weren't sure exactly what it was supposed to be. The next year, Fukushima happened, and we thought it might have been that. But then I've been led to believe in more recent years that it's actually something on even a greater scale than that, possibly involving an impact from a celestial body like a comet or an asteroid or a rogue planet of some kind. It was here in November of 2016 when I had just been swimming with a pod of dolphins and had several days in a row of beautiful, beautiful, powerful encounters, when I received this image in my mind when I was back up at my little table painting, that when I drew it, I realized it was an impression of what a comet or asteroid might look like if it was coming straight toward us, passing through the atmosphere. I felt like that the dolphins had put that image in my mind for various reasons. In honor of Theodore Roszak's admonition or slogan to think globally but act locally, I'll sort of outline some of the ecological or environmental issues here on Great Barrier Island. Compared to the rest of New Zealand, Aotea is relatively undisrupted in terms of environmental damage from civilization, industry, commercial development, anything that people do, relatively speaking. There are some nice parts of New Zealand, but they're becoming fewer and further between. But especially, for example, way down in Fiordland, where it's just not accessible at all. Areas like that are still untouched, except maybe by invasion from the air. But Great Barrier Island has, ever since I first came here in 2006, I fell in love with the beautiful spirit of the place. An island that's 100 kilometers east of Auckland, and geologically an extension of the Coromandel Peninsula, quite mountainous and volcanic. It's got a population of somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people year-round. Very low density of population, mainly concentrated in a small number of little communities. But to me, this island has always been about the beauty and power of nature, not about anything that people do. So I can't imagine anyone living here trying to live just the same life that they would if they were over in Auckland or in another city or something, which seems to be what almost everybody here I know is doing. They're not doing anything different because they're here that they would do differently if they were in a city. The same mentality. I don't know anybody here that wakes up every day and looks out and goes, oh my God, look at where I am. What can I do to try to help preserve the relative pristine condition of the land and the sea and the conditions for all the wildlife and the plants? What can I do to help protect this? Or what can I do to lessen my own impact? Instead, almost everybody, and this is not just here, this is everywhere, the mentality is, oh, what can I get for myself today? How can I help myself go further down the road towards all my dreams and goals of material acquisition and more property and more cars and more prestige and more stuff? And it's just a mentality that I never really resonated with at all. Now less than ever. But one of the biggest problems here, and then again, keep in mind, this is me talking, someone who loves this place but who comes and goes. I don't stay here all the time, but I do spend a few weeks or months every year here, which I'm very blessed to be able to do. But just as an example, right in the very backyard of where I stay, it's what hopefully is not going to be a new trend, but it could easily be, because there is kind of a shortage of new lots on the beach where people can build new houses. These people bought a perfectly good little beach shack that was actually itself already located in a lot that was in between a bunch of other places that, by all standards of common sense, there would never have been anything built there anyway, just because it makes the whole area too high density. But because this was just a relatively nondescript but still viable beach cottage, and people were only there, they didn't even come every year, so it sat there empty. It was a benign object on the landscape. But last year, these rich people from Auckland bought that lot, they moved that little house, and for the past 14 months, they've been spending probably close to $2 million to have this giant monstrosity of what can only be described as a ludicrous waste of materials and manpower. It's a guest house that's like two stories tall. And from listening to my friends describe the inside of it, it's as completely non-functional as could be. The windows don't open more than just a few centimeters. There's only one door in and out of the place, which is a giant sliding glass door that's like 3 or 4 meters tall. It takes almost two people to move it. The whole place is designed for only short-term occupancy, even though it's got four bedrooms. What I've had to listen to for the past week, above and beyond what I had to listen to last year for several weeks, which is their giant electrical generator that they crank up that runs on diesel. You hear that literally solid for 8 hours a day. Then they've got their unbelievably loud Makita radio that they play, just the most abominable cess coming from radio stations in Auckland, like 90s rap from America, and just unbelievable stuff. And they leave it running really loud right next to my little cottage, even if nobody's there to listen to it. So literally, a lot of the time, I'm the only person that has to hear it. Do they think about that? Do they think about if the noise that they make from the radio is could possibly be bothering somebody? No, it never even crosses their mind. These people are just dull, coarse dumbasses that are... The whole construction industry in general, but especially here, if it weren't for them, this place would not be going up. Sure, you could say that about every house, but it's like, you know, there's limits. There's limits to what should be done and what should not be done. And the problem with our society is that we have no limits. We have no sense of regulating our own behavior when it comes to anything like that. But so what they've been doing the past week is concreting the driveway, which has been, it's taken like 5 or 6 people a week to build the forms for the concrete and to spread it. And then they've got to come back and take it all out and put down, I heard, 16 pallets of blocks of some kind. So, you know, this thing's probably not going to be finished while I'm here on this visit. And something tells me that when I come back next year, it might even still not be finished for some unforeseen reason. Maybe the people didn't like it, and so they're going to have it torn down and rebuilt. They don't seem to have any shortage of money. But anyway, this is just one lot that's actually... This whole project has literally driven a stake into the very heart of any tranquility that this little part of Medlands Beach had. And it could happen at a number of other places. Driving down the beach the other day, we saw 5 more lots going down the south side of Arafaro on Sandhills Road. That the exact same thing could happen. But I must commend the people down the beach. They did manage to shit can a project that was going to be several meters tall. I don't know if the people had paid their $10,000 resource allocation consent fund or not to have the violation overridden with the several meters high construction. But the neighbors apparently got it shit canned, so good on them. But again, nobody's going to do anything unless it's affecting them personally. They're not going to act on behalf of, for example, all the dotterels and oyster catchers on the beach whose babies get mauled by dogs every year, or the life forms, the birds, or possibly even people like myself, for example, who are bothered by the loud noise of the airplanes. That, you know, this past week hasn't been too bad because it's the slow time of year, but it's a Friday now, so there's going to be a lot more planes. But I hear the same motors, the same chronic engine noise year after year. And it's a combination of two things. A, they tend to choose flight paths that bring them directly over Arafaro Beach, just so the passengers can look down and see the pretty beach, right over one of the most densely populated areas on the island. And at a low altitude, they don't have to come in that way. But also, they're using dinosaurian, archaic airplanes with outmoded engines and propeller designs that could easily be replaced, that would not only increase the fuel efficiency, but drop the noise by at least about a factor of 50 or 75%. This type of propeller design, called a Scimitar, has been around for a long time. You know, so this is stuff that I've been gradually trying to follow up on in terms of communicating with the council of the island and the Auckland Council to try to make some progress, just to get some of these things on people's radar, because most of the people are so busy with their day-to-day humdrum activities and going and coming and all their social stuff and watching TV that they don't notice any of this stuff. Whereas I like to spend my time out in nature, away from the people stuff as much as possible. Because I come and go, I notice all this stuff from year to year. There's also a giant hillside about a kilometer to the north that's being gradually excavated out of existence in order to quarry gravel for road construction. And that this has even been allowed to go on has always amazed me, because it's the one giant gaping wound in the whole landscape that you can see from any distance. And right now they've already cut up to the very top of the ridge. I don't think they can cross the ridge, but, you know, how much further they can go, it's just unbelievable to me. But, you know, all these are relatively minor issues. They're also, the Auckland Council is deploying lots of this deadly pesticide called Roundup or glyphosate on the dunes here, in the exact areas where all the little birds nest and stuff. And nobody seems to be too concerned about that. And another issue that I was trying to work on, get on people's radar, is for any boat with a propeller to use a propeller guard or a shroud to protect against cutting into any fish or dolphins or sea turtles or people that might be in the ocean there. But again, there seems to be zero interest in this. So sometimes I feel like I'm just banging my head against the wall by even sharing all this stuff, because it seems like there's almost nobody that actually cares. And I keep on trying to do my best to get these things on people's radar, because I love Mother Earth and I love this place. The problem's not with the place, the problem's with the people. And finally, I must comment on their recently acquired Dark Sky Initiative. Apparently the island has just been granted Dark Sky Initiative status by some organization. I looked into this last year and it's not anything official. It's just, what it really comes down to is that they've declared that the skies here are dark, and that's primarily at night, I'm guessing. But sure they are, and it's 100 kilometers from Auckland. There's not any big cities close by, so compared to Auckland, it's got great skies. But compared to areas of serious astronomical good viewing, areas that with really low atmospheric humidity and or high elevation, and preferably both, like in the Warrumbungles in New South Wales, where I was just visiting a few months ago, like in the mountains in Chile, like on the mountaintops in Mauna Kea, in Hawaii. And that coupled with the chronically cloudy weather here, I don't see how declaring this place a dark sky reserve means anything other than it's a tourism gimmick to get people to spend a lot of money to come here, pay for accommodation, rent vehicles and stuff, and go around and try to look at the stars. That seems to me exactly what it's all about. I've tried to suggest that people make the place into a low noise reserve, where they would take into consideration some of the things I've just been talking about, especially the planes, some of the vehicles that you hear with no mufflers, like motorcycles, the rampant use of overly high-powered lawnmowers, weed eaters, and stuff like that. And this is not even mentioning the construction industry, which they've probably used. Just in the past week, I've probably heard about 50 different kinds of motor noises and machines, often with several going at once, and iced on top of the cake by the radio, going at full rep-level blast volume. Yesterday, it was funny, I went out there with my little video camera to record the sound of the rap music coming from this radio, and it was there with nobody, no workers, not even in sight in any direction, and all of a sudden, this bloke comes walking down. I was filming him, he didn't see me, but he was strutting as if he was a rapper. He, in his own mind, he was a rapper, and so he was going along with the music, like he thought that was cool, and guess what he did? While I was filming, he came and actually turned the radio up, so they could hear it even more from about, you know, 80 meters away where they were working. Now, why didn't he pick up the radio and take it down there to where they were? This is the mentality of these people. But that's enough on all the issues here as I see it. It's still my very favorite part of New Zealand, Aotea. And I love her. And it's so lovely to be able to go out and go down and see my favorite Pahutukawa tree at Haratanga Beach, where I'll go probably this weekend, where I've camped out many times and done two interspecies interviews with Grandmother Pahutukawa and Teddy Wally, Ruby Ann, Big Teddy, Heidi, and Phil, my kaitiakis. And we're going to do another interspecies interview while I'm here. Also, right down the beach, we've got another twin pair of Pahutukawa trees that I kind of refer to them as Black Elk and Rachel Carson. And then down the other end of the beach, another Grandmother Pahutukawa. And we've got Te Ahumata, the mountain that's the largest outcropping of quartzite in the southern hemisphere. And we've got Hirakamata, the tallest mountain, an ancient volcano that I'm going to visit this time. Possibly do an arduous day journey where I would bicycle there, walk up the mountain, walk back down, and then bicycle back. Doable. And I'd really like to thank my wonderful friends John and Peggy and Garlic for having me, and congratulate them on their new Nissan Leaf, a zero-emissions electric car that they've just got. It's John's pride and joy as he goes out to recharge it every day. I'd like to thank everybody at Okiwi School, my very, very favorite school in the Southern Hemisphere, and I'm looking forward to going and painting rocks with you again this year, hopefully in much greater depth than we ever have before. I'd like to do it like two or three days in a row. All this is invisible to the public eye. The massive amount of hydrocarbon exploration going on in New Zealand's EEZ, which is the fifth largest in the world. This is totally invisible to the public eye. The grave threat to the Maui's dolphins, who exist only here in New Zealand, probably only 40-some of them left. Now, you just don't even hear about them anymore. You've got the astronomical amount of traffic, automobile traffic, in the Auckland area that makes it almost impossible to go anywhere for many hours of the day. I don't see how anybody would voluntarily put up with that. You've got the problem from the massive amount of dairy farming going on in New Zealand, and it's all being exported to China, but the ecological devastation, the land that's being taken up, the amount of fresh water that's being both consumed and diverted from rivers, and that's being polluted by waste and offal from these plants. It just seems like the main thing that I can keep coming back to in a show called On the Brink Radio is the what I refer to as the Atlantean discontinuity, because it seems essential for me to have one foot in both paradigms. One is that in the slight chance that there may be a seventh generation in the sense of the Iroquois Native Americans, there may be generations of our ancestors who are still here to hopefully benefit from what we've learned and been able to share and leave. Hopefully that more than suffering from the stupidity and the greed and the destructiveness that our species is exhibiting at this time. So a big part of my work is trying to prepare my legacy for the seventh generation, but also to facilitate and expedite the healing of Koyaanisqatsi, the healing of the damage that we're doing to Mother Earth in the most effective and quick way as possible. And I can only intuitively guess at how this is going to happen, but I just pray to the Great Spirit and all beings of love and truth and beauty to guide me in both of these processes, because I'm still here now on this planet, and I love Mother Earth. And it just sickens me to see what passes for normal these days in terms of the mentality of people, how little people actually feel a true connection with nature more than just lip service, how people really do care a lot more about their houses and their cars and their money and their furniture, their holidays and their sport and all this irrelevant bullshit. They really care, they really love all this stuff much more than they do the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the stars and the ocean and the dolphins and the whales and the morporks and the tuis and the rurus and the kakarikis and the white and black cockatoos and the marsupials, the thylacines and the platypus and the wombats and the pygmy possums and the spiders and the snakes and the butterflies. Oh my! Anyway, that's probably enough for this show. I'm looking at the beautiful sunlight sparkling on the ocean as I sit here. Some topics for upcoming shows are going to be parasitosis versus symbiosis. The cetacean experience of us. Artificial intelligence. Mega technology and the electric juggernaut. So, two of these are just dealing with stuff that hopefully isn't going to matter on this planet for too much longer. But it still seems to me to be an essential part of helping people to achieve their highest level of re-navigation for their life. If they've got the most state-of-the-art awareness and insights about what's really going on and things that matter, it's all going to help us to at least lessen the severity of the purification, in the words of Thomas Bunyaki, the Hopi elder I met in 1986. If we can lessen the severity of the purification, it'll be easier for the people of one heart of all the kingdoms of life to be nurtured as the seeds of the new creation. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off from atop Memory Island here on beautiful Antia. Sitting in the warm, beautiful sunshine, looking at the sparkling sunlight and hoping some dolphins might appear. I'm going to go back and eat a few go-to colas and paint some rocks and work on some beautiful astronomical art for the gallery to help me pay for my new Nikon camera so I can take my most ultimate photographs ever, work on my films about the whales and dolphins, and organize my photographic negatives and files for the printing of some books in honor of Heatia, Flinders Island, Tasmania, a book about my art. I love you guys, and thank you to the Dreamtime ancestors of the Central Desert and the Top End and the whale-dreaming peoples of Australia and all the whale-dreaming people of Heatia, all the kingdoms of life, and all my beautiful friends and family. I love you. Take care, and talk with you next week. Kia ora. Thank you. Well,